Good afternoon. So this presentation is about dormant stem water potential in California during the winter and its interaction with our drought. The real fundamental question here is whether these almond trees are water stressed. This is an almond orchard in December 2 years ago, and the question is raised because we are, as you know, in a drought. As we've had multiple years now of severe drought where we don't experience the typical precipitation in the winter that we're used to, or really any precipitation, farmers become nervous that they should be irrigating their dormant tree crops or fruit trees, and so we need tools to answer that question. Typically, to answer the question of whether a plant needs to be watered, you want to assess its water status with something like the pressure chamber. So, as many of you know, you take a leaf or a stem and you put it in the chamber and pressurize it with compressed nitrogen and wait for water to appear on the cut surface with a magnifying glass. And so the question here is whether you can use that same system but with dormant twigs. When asking a question like this, the first place you want to go is the literature to find out if it's been done before and what is recommended. This article from 2013 states that while the pressure chamber is a typical method for determining this, it is difficult to apply during winter because of the formation of embolisms and the small portion of living tissues. And you would think this would be well supported. They have several citations. However, almost none of those citations address this statement, and only one of them addresses it directly. And all that paper says is that, unfortunately, we can't measure water potential because there's a small portion of living tissues. And there's no citation, and there's no data provided from either article. But because we're not given much, we have to kind of work with what we've got and think about what these authors' perspective is on this assertion. So we think back to how the pressure chamber works. It works by placing positive pressure in the chamber, and then water begins to flow towards the atmosphere, and you can see it on the cut surface once it is just above that negative tension in the xylem. And to sustain that water flow, you need water to escape from the living cells around the vasculature and contribute to that sustained flow. And so that may be what the percent living that they're referring to is. So the high embolism error, that would mean that you would have to first fill those embolisms before you could see water on the cut surface. That would mean that it would underestimate water potential. It would be a more negative value. And again, we see that same underestimate if it was a reduced percentage of living tissue. However, the mechanism would be from a reduced supply to sustain that endpoint. So we know that to see an endpoint and to use the pressure chamber technique, we need to first fill the vasculature and then sustain the flow. And that embolism and low percent living, those could really cause an erroneous reading. So to test this, we turn to the in-situ thermocouple psychrometer. That's another water potential measure, and it uses the vapor phase to measure water potential, so it's not affected by percent living or embolism, so it's a good control. And our hypothesis was, all right, if percent living and embolism are not in play for these twigs that we would be measuring, then these two water potential techniques should be in agreement. This was the setup in the laboratory. Two branches, this is just showing one, but two branches were taken from the orchard. There were a set of two branches of almond, walnut, and cherry, respectively. The branch was affixed with a ring stand. It was placed in a water beaker. It was cut underwater. And the psychrometer was affixed to the base. And then the terminal one-year-old twigs were clipped off and pressurized to form a comparison between the continuously logging psychrometer. This is a very busy graph, but I'll just walk you through it. We have two sets of lines. We have a blue set of lines and a black set of lines, and those correspond to the two branches that are sitting in the laboratory. The solid sets of lines, those are the continuous psychrometer readings that are taking place every 15 minutes, and the dotted lines are the pressure chamber readings. The blue set of lines was the corresponding to the branch that the water was first removed, and subsequently you see that the water potential begins to decline according to both measures until it gets to approximately negative 1.7 megapascals. It's recut underwater and it sits again in that beaker of water, and very soon after, the water potential rises to near zero according to both measures. Again, this is done with the branch that is represented by the black set of lines. However, the only difference this time was that when it got to approximately negative 2 megapascals, instead of immediately recutting the branch underwater, we just placed it in water and there was no response. So it didn't continue to decline in water potential, and it didn't increase in water potential back to near zero, just as you may expect a florist to cut the stems underwater to prevent embolism. We see that again, once we recut it underwater, the water potential recovered. Another important note here, besides the relative agreement between the two measures as we imposed this treatment, was that there's this variability at the start. That's before insulation was used around the psychrometer, because the psychrometer responds to temperature. Once there was insulation and a heat sink, the readings were more consistent. The regression results are again a busy graph, but they are broken out by the two psychrometers. We had and so we see two sets of regressions for both of the psychrometers, and that the almond and cherry regressions were not significantly different from one another. They were regressed together. Walnut was significantly different, and the almond and cherry tended to be below one as a regression, whereas walnut was above one. But the take-home message here was that the both readings were close. The slope was near one in three out of four cases, and the R-square was high and highly significant. So going forward, we see that at least in the samples that we took, there did not appear to be this dramatic effect of a reduced percent of living tissue or of embolism causing a disruption in the readings. And so we take this out to the field. Can we use this in the field to determine when to irrigate during the winter, when to start irrigating in spring? And so we looked at this in response to irrigation. In 2011, there was quite a bit of winter precipitation in December before these readings began, about 5 inches or so. And we see from the blue dotted line that these twig readings were less negative in 2011 than they were in 2012. And we see also that there were more rain events from the gray lines in 2011 and 2012. This black line below shows just the fully watered baseline. This is a measure we use during the growing season to indicate what a fully irrigated tree would read, and we can't use that to mean the same thing during winter when there's no leaves. but it does give us an indication of what VPD is doing. So it responds to the relative rainfall experienced by the tree, but it also responds to irrigation. In response to a single irrigation, trees that were not irrigated, they declined in water potential, whereas trees that were irrigated maintained the same water potential. And then, following a second irrigation, the two treatments were not significantly different. And the water potential levels we saw here, the difference around the 19th of February, that was not enough to clearly see a difference between the trees as they were blooming around this time, that there was any difference because of that difference in water stress. So in summary, we can see a response to this measure in the laboratory with hydration or desiccation, and in the field, it responded as we would expect it to with environmental conditions. So it really goes back to the question of whether these trees are water stressed. I took pressure chamber readings that day, and as we found in many places in the state, the readings were approximately -0.02 megapascals, so very close to zero. So although we don't have a range of values for what a water-stressed tree would be during winter and how that may result in any reduced, any negative impacts in spring as it emerges from dormancy, I think we can all agree that a water potential value very close to zero is not water stressed. Thank you.
Yeah, we have time for one or two questions.
Yes, sir.
About 20, 25 years ago, Nicholas Faust published papers on water being bound in the tree during endodormancy, measured by nuclear magnetic resonance. So would you expect the psychometric or the pressure bomb readings to differ based on stage of dormancy in the wintertime?
So the question was in regards to the binding of water in the tree during dormancy and whether that would change across the different states of dormancy that the tree experiences. I don't think it would per se, but I think that a lot of water is being bound in the tree, and that's why we're seeing values close to zero. You would not see that. Most of the literature that looks at this area is in response to freezing conditions, where you can get embolism and negative values and issues with recovery in spring, but these trees didn't experience those kind of conditions. So from a strictly precipitation irrigation perspective, we don't think we saw stress. Any other questions? Or I guess I'm out of time, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.